Welcome to the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. It's Tom and Terry from the Hot Stove Society, where we come to you every week for 2 hours on the weekends, often Saturday evenings, Sunday mornings, and sometimes even Sunday evenings.
If we're lucky.
Kind of depends on the sports schedule for right. Cairo. So we're happy to be part of their lineup, as we have been for many, many years. Today, we have a large show. By the way, I'm Tom Douglas, chef owner of many of the Seattle restaurants that you know, like Lola, Palace Kitchen, Carlisle Room, to name a few.
Just a few. And I'm Thierry Roturo, the chef in the hat, owner of Luc in Madison Valley and Lule downtown Seattle at the corner of 6th and Union in the Sheraton Grand.
In the Sheraton Grand. You know, Terry, we have a new sponsor on the show.
Yep.
It's the Whidbey Camino Island Group. We want to share with you a fun event happening out there. The farmers, producers, and chefs of Whidbey Island are passionate about what they do and where they live. At the end of the growing season, it's time to share the bounty of the land with the Whidbey Island Grown Week, a 10-day celebration of local products, services, and experiences coming up September 27th to October 6th. Learn more at whidbeycaminoisland.com/Seattle Kitchen. You can also go over to our Facebook page, Seattle Kitchen. We've posted it, all the information about it there. So enjoy Whidbey Camino. I plan on getting up there sometime during that week. I can't wait. It's been a long time for me.
I just came back from Shaw Island.
Uh-huh.
And I tell you, the San Juans are worth going to this time of the year. It's absolutely beautiful.
That's a different island, chef.
I know it's a different island, but
sponsoring our show.
It's, oh my God, it's coming, it's coming. It's a much smaller island, I tell you.
Anyway, welcome to the Whidbey Camino Island Group, to the Seattle Kitchen Show, and we look forward to spending some time with you all up there. Today on the show, common cooking mistakes you may be making at home and ways to avoid them. Bethany Jean Clement was here last week, and we got an extra segment taped with her. And so we're going to listen to more about the new Seattle dining scene, her projections on how they're she and Toronto are going to go about
reviewing
and what's important to them. And at the same time, I have a big apology to make to my friend Travis. I said that Tango closed, and then I think we said that Rumba, the bar next to it, had closed, and boy, did I get an earful this weekend.
No, the Rumba is still open.
Rumba is still open and serving Rumba.
Right. serving lots of rum.
Lots of cocktails, and so we'd like to apologize to Travis and his team there, and look forward to having a drink with them soon. Or if you're going to a show at the Paramount, that's a good time. Travis might even come on. You know, we haven't had him on for a very long time.
Yeah.
Might come on next week and talk about what they do at Rumba. I'm looking forward to that. Tips on where to spend and where to splurge when shopping for your home kitchen.
It's always a good one.
You know, we get those questions so often, especially through our Facebook pages. When do I buy the good olive oil, right? Or what's the difference between that butter and this butter? And so it's interesting to hear other people's opinions on it. And the one that, Tina, that you had kind of called out in much of that conversation is the one from King Arthur Flour. And she had a lot of interesting things to say. I thought she was right on the money. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's do this. Ordinary to extraordinary.
Whoa, hold on one second, Tom.
What?
I do want to give a big shout-out to your daughter, Loretta,
mm-hmm.
and her new husband.
Yeah.
And to you, father, and to Jackie, mother.
Yeah.
Big round of applause for a great wedding.
Yeah, we actually hosted and catered her wedding at Prosser Farm. You hear us talk about Prosser all the time.
Sure.
Well, normally we grow vegetables there. This year we grew an awful lot of flowers for the team to put together. The place looked beautiful. Our catering team did a wonderful job. We had a delicious Dahlia bread salad and all sorts of good things. I was a fry cook for a night. We'll get into that later, but I fried chicken for 120 people. I was by myself until everyone realized I needed help.
This is a good shower afterwards.
Ooh, man. I looked the part, I will say that. You ever see the movie The Lady and a Tramp?
Yes, of course.
Yeah?
The famous scene of the spaghetti eating, right?
So how do you make this? I felt like he was more just interested, the dogs were interested in kissing rather than eating the spaghetti and meatballs.
Well, yeah.
Well, yeah, but how do you make that spaghetti and meatballs more interesting than the kissing? Ooh, make it extraordinary.
I'm sorry, you're talking to a Frenchman. That's going to be a hard one on this one. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You are too American for me.
Okay.
Can't do it.
If you wanted to attract
the moon,
a bride,
the moon is up high.
What would you do to the meatballs if you wanted to attract a bride or the spaghetti?
That would
meatballs?
Be different. Okay. I would say, definitely say then I would use some good meat to start with because I think that it's often disregarded as, oh, it's just meatball or whatever. Use some good ground beef and season your ground beef really well. You know, put some nice oregano, some chopped shallots in there, and then cook those meatballs all the way and make a good tomato sauce that goes with a very good basic tomato sauce with the heirloom tomato we have available right now. Just going to cook a little bit longer, full of water, but take your time, cook it down, put some fresh herb at the end, a little bit of sizzled garlic in there, add it at the last minute, put that over the spaghetti, and she will kiss you forever. That's
like
the goal, right?
I like all of that. I especially like the idea of the little toasted garlic over at the end and drizzle some of that olive oil.
Yeah.
I would go back to the meatballs for a second, and I like a little mixture of meat.
Oh, you do?
So I do like a little Italian sausage. I do maybe a little lighter style beef like veal, and then some regular beef. And then I actually stud mine with a mozzarella cheese so that when you cook them and you brown them in the pan, the cheese kind of melts out and gets kind of crusty and brown and lovely and delicious.
Plus melting on the inside.
The other thing you can do with a meatball that I find is interesting is you put the meat mixture, the force meat, into your mixer, like your KitchenAid, put the paddle on there and whip it a bit.
Right.
Before you put the cheese in.
Right.
Whip the meat. And it gets kind of fluffy and lighter and airy so that when you're eating your meatballs and you're trying to attract a bride, right?
Right.
Isn't that where our goal was?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're fluffy. They're lovely.
They don't
weigh you down.
You could put a little bit of sour cream in there. That would be also delicious.
That would be delicious, too. And then you'd have sauerbraten. No.
It's close enough.
But anyway, so, you know, just by whipping the meat a little bit, it gets light and airy, and it gives you a lighter style meatball. Then fold in your mozzarella, your chopped mozzarella cheese. So
cool.
Just a little technique to take your ordinary meatballs to extraordinary.
That's
okay.
Delicious.
That's the only one we had time for. I'm glad we got that settled. Everything's bridal today. I'm just in the wedding mood.
Especially as you should be.
Especially when I was on my hands and knees trying to take apart the dance floor. That was exciting to be the father of the bride.
I'm sure it's
going to
be on YouTube very soon.
Exactly. Okay, some common cooking mistakes. We're going to fix them for you right here from the Hot Stove Society and the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. We're back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio. I don't know. We just talked about our wedding in the break, the wedding that we had this weekend. You know, I was tagging the cornhole. The cornhole that we bought was for the games for the wedding.
Uh-huh.
And if you just joined us, we hosted and catered our daughter's wedding at Prosser Farm this weekend. But the last minute, the cornhole came in a box. We pulled it out of the box and... it was just plain plywood.
And so, not painted?
No, it wasn't painted, nothing. So
aww,
I got a couple of cans of spray paint, and my daughter saw me heading. Like, I have been putting together the farm for months and doing stuff for months to get ready for this. So, you know, this is about 2 hours before the wedding, something like
you
that.
You were spraying.
And I have the two cans of spray paint in my hand. And my daughter says, where are you going? I said, I'm going to go take care of the cornhole. It's corn. It's like it's my territory. And she says, well, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm going to tag it. You know, like graffiti.
Yeah.
Right? She says, no, you're not. I said, yes, I am. She said, well, it's my wedding. It's like, I've heard that now for 6 months. She gets to make every choice. So, you know what? It's my paint. And I'm tagging the cornhole. And I walked out there and I tagged it and it looked beautiful.
What did you tag it? What did you, like your signature?
Ben and Lo. I just made it personal to the wedding.
Oh, nice.
That was very nice. And it was quite artistic. It looked like something you might see on the side of a railroad car or something like that. Quite artistic.
Good for you.
Okay, back to cooking. That's what somebody's saying in their garden right now. Will you just talk about cooking, please? Common cooking mistakes. So, Tina, you got these... thoughts by perusing the internet. Is that what you do all day?
Yeah, all day. I just sit there and read and read and read. No, often when I'm prepping for the show, I like to research blogs or cooking articles or things that might spark conversation between you two. And lately, what has been on my mind an awful lot is cooking mistakes because I make so many of them. Mm-hmm. So I
figured, you were on a good roll for a while.
You know, I'm getting better, much better.
Okay.
And I'm cooking a whole lot more. I'm cooking a couple times a week. So maybe this will help me and help some of our listeners.
A whole lot more is a couple times a week?
Oh, gosh, yeah. That's a whole lot more compared to never.
Yeah.
So I figured these might help some of our listeners and myself in the kitchen. And these are things that people might do. You know, you don't know what happens in there. Suddenly you might find yourself in a conundrum. The first one is about seasoning your food properly. And according to this, sometimes it's really hard for people to get that just right. Mm-hmm. Do you season before? Do you season after? Mm-hmm. And we talked a little bit about salts in the last episode of Seattle Kitchen. Mm-hmm. So this talks a bit about that. What are your tips for seasoning properly? Or well, how to avoid over-seasoning, maybe?
I have a big pet peeve about when I see people seasoning, especially in my kitchen, when I see the cook who has a piece of meat that's about 6-inch square, and they season like straight in the middle, and they don't season the entire piece. It drives me crazy. And people do that a lot. They take a piece of meat and they sprinkle like this in the middle because they think it's seasoned. You know, season the entire piece of meat if you want to season the meat. Don't just season the center, because your other pieces are going to be under seasoned and your center is going to be over seasoned. So that's one of the advice. And also, there are many different kinds of salts on the market. You know, people talk about salts all the time. You know, for me, what I do at my house is I have a pestle and a mortar, and I use the salt from Oregon, from
Jacobson.
Mm-hmm. And I just mortar that pestle so it's a little bit finer, because the flakes are pretty big, and you mortar that, and this is what I use everywhere. It's a little bit more expensive, but I use a third, if not a quarter, of what you normally would use mm-hmm. on some of the other salt out there. I know people are very big on kosher salt. We use it in our kitchen. My problem with kosher salt is it's way undersalted. It's, for some reason, I always have to add more and more and more, you know, because it feels like it's undersalted. Mm-hmm. So.
And salts are not all the same saline level.
No.
You know, like the sel gris we talked about, the gray salt from France tends to be saltier than, say, the kosher salt. So just be aware of how salty your salt is.
All right. This one's really interesting. They're saying measuring flour by volume can often be a common mistake rather than by weight.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Pastry, so, go ahead.
Pastry, in most general cases of anything dry in pastry, is better off being weighed. You should have a little scale at home. It doesn't, you know, for $10-$15 you can buy a scale and have a scale at home and just measure your sugar, your flour, your baking powder. You know, unless it's just a little bit, then you use a tablespoon because it usually measures it that way. But in weight, you have a more precise chemistry.
Yeah, because sometimes people want to pack the flour into the cup, and that's going to be heavier. The other thing is when you do buy a little digital scale for your home, make sure that you get one that has a tare weight possibility so that you can put your container on the scale and then tare weight it to zero and then go. And then also, at minimum, 1/100 of an ounce scale, because by the time if you get to 1 ounce, and then by the time all that space in between 1 and 2 ounces, you really have to scale that to the more precise.
Yeah, and usually you
don't get an ounce scale is what I'm
ounce saying. Ounce and gram, you know, if
don't
you can
get an ounce scale.
And
get
the one that's ounce and gram, because it's it's very existing everywhere, and grams are just a little bit more refined in terms of not more refined, you just can't get down to
more
a much
precise,
smaller smaller basis.
All right, a common cooking mistake might be that people cook their meat straight out of the refrigerator. Is that a no-no?
Well, it used to be a no-no, and then some people like KG came around and said, no, take it out of the freezer, put it in the pan.
Kenji Lopez Alt.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a, you know, it's up to you. I'm a big believer. I've done it all my life, so I'm not going to change today. I'm an old dinosaur. I'm not changing that. But I like to take my meat out of the fridge at least an hour or two beforehand.
An hour or two?
Yeah. Wow. I believe in that very strongly.
Let it come to room temperature?
Yeah. Well, I don't wait for room temp. That would be a little bit too much. But just to at least taking the very hot coal that's in the middle and making sure that the meat is getting a little bit soft, you know, more room temp associated.
Yeah, I don't think it makes a bit of difference, honestly. I think if you're cooking too rare, the colder the center, the better. will help you not overcook your steak by the time you get a good char on the outside. That's the same technique with cooking from frozen. You cook on medium heat and just keep working the char on the outside because you want that crustiness. And then by the time everything is all done, your center is still rare because it started out frozen. So it does not scientifically change anything.
And the good thing about cooking rare is you can always cook it more. Mm-hmm. Slice it thin, fan it on the plate, put it in the oven at 325 degrees for 2 minutes, and your steak is exactly like you want it. Your meat, whatever you want.
And on the same note, what about slicing meat without letting it rest first?
That's a big no-no for me. I don't believe in that. I believe you have to rest your meat.
And what's happening then when it's resting? Like, what's going on there?
You'd have to look it up scientifically because neither one of us, I believe,
we're not scientists.
Are qualified for that. But
the basic idea is if you put something on a very hot piece of heat, most likely all the good liquid is going to go away to the furthest point, which is the center of the meat, and then you let it rest so all that liquid comes back to where it needs to go, which basically keeps the meat tenderer.
Right. Well, and more moist. So the idea is that when you cut your steak, that your color is the same pretty much throughout the inch or inch and a half thick steak. And if you haven't let it rest properly, you'll notice that the outsides are gray and the inside is a stripe of red. That's what you don't want, right? The other thing, when you rest, you want to rest on like a cookie rack. You don't want to put a hot steak onto a plate so that it steams underneath. And the steam can't escape, so it just continues to cook your steak past where you want it. You put it just on a little rack, cookie rack, with your cooling rack, and rest on the cooling rack, and that will give you a much more consistent resting period.
Yeah,
Got that?
Love it up.
That was very exciting, Tina. Thank you so much.
That was actually very handy.
Yeah,
I learned something. Did y'all learn?
Yeah,
there you go. All right.
Problem is, you don't cook steak.
That's a true story. That's a real problem.
Do the same with eggplant.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
I'll let my eggplant rest.
You had a thought about talking about some of our listeners and the events that they're doing this summer.
Yes.
Or have done this summer. So Let's talk about that when we come back on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. Yay! We're happy to be here. I came in from a long drive this morning from Prosser Farm in eastern Washington,
You're a warrior, Mr. Douglas.
3.5-hour drive to get here this morning just to be in time for this show and for Miss Emily, who's sitting at the mic.
Hi.
Hello.
Tina, you had some thoughts about some listener events, but then Terry invited up a question from our audience. So we're going to start there and go back to our listener events.
Thank you. I'm so excited to
Emily.
Be here. You mentioned measuring flour and other dry ingredients by weight, and most recipes aren't written that way. So what is a way we can convert those measurements, or what is your suggestion?
It's a good point. A lot of recipes are written down by cups and by teaspoon and so on and so forth. Then you should follow that recipe because the person that actually did that recipe wrote it down that way because they tried it that way. The problem with that, we're always saying to the fact of the scale, is it's not quite accurate because your cup is not exactly like my cup. That's all.
Or sometimes people get confused and they use a liquid measure cup instead of a dry measure cup. And
that's
then all of a sudden you've got a quarter too much flour.
Right.
Or they pack it with the scoop. But I would say if you have a favorite recipe and you want to change to grams, just take a teaspoon of baking powder and then weigh it. Right? There's 28 grams to an ounce. And then the same thing, you just have to rewrite your recipe if you want to do that trouble. Or you do what Chef just told you, which is follow it the way it was written because that's the way it was tested.
Yeah, and you can always transfer to your cookbook. You know, it's nice to write on your cookbook next to it all the gram and all the ounces or whatever you're going to change it to. So
it's
always good.
Tried it.
When we wrote the Dahlia Bakery cookbook, we did it in both grams and ounces because everyone likes a little something different.
Right.
Thank you, Emily.
Okay, thank you.
Nice
thank
question.
You.
All right, so we have a very fun following on our Facebook page, Seattle Kitchen, where there's lots of fun discussions happening, and right now people are talking a lot about entertaining and making foods for events. So Chrissy McLeod hopped on our Facebook page, and she is very excited for the first football game, the Seahawks versus the Bengals, happening this Sunday. She wants to know, is there something fancier than wings and chips and salsa that she can make at her Seahawks party, some appetizer ideas?
Absolutely. This time of year, there's so much you can do. Those nice little watermelon, tomato, avocado salad, you can make that. That'd be a nice, easy one to
You want to break that down for us a little bit?
Yeah, you want to do that with chips?
Sure.
All right,
let's
so
do it.
You'd have to chop everything down a little bit. Obviously, small dice of watermelon, tomato, a little mozzarella, and some avocado. And then you mix the whole thing together, season. He's laughing because he's like, how the heck do you go from... Yeah, I know.
I'm just thinking watermelon salsa right now. And it's a little wet.
It's fine.
It's fine.
You're going with chips. It's just very seasonal. Finished with some nice anise isop or basil. You have tons of basil in the garden. Mm-hmm. So finish with a bunch of basil. You do that an hour before you leave your house and then keep it cold and bring it with you. And I would be so excited if
fancy
I had...
salsa.
There you go.
If I had that for...
Let's put a few chilies in there, huh, Chef?
Oh, yeah. That's true. A few chili would be good.
All right. I'm going to tell her to make some club sandwiches or... Because I don't think people make those anymore.
Yeah.
And you can make them in all sorts of ways, right? So typically a club sandwich is the three slices of bread, and you can layer them with whatever you want. So I would make some smoked salmon clubs, some turkey and bacon clubs, some ham clubs, and then you quarter them with a little pick in them. So that now you're really only eating a quarter of a sandwich. You can try a couple of different flavors and be a fun football party.
Well, I think if you and I go together and we both bring that, that would be delicious.
Watermelon salsa and club sandwich.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're going to need a little bit more. We're going to need some beer with that.
Yeah.
All right. Emily Sakuma has another event. My younger sister down in New Mexico, she says, just had her first baby, and although I can't make it to her shower, I would like to send a box of yummy gifts for an excited but tired new mom.
I would send her some jam because I love making jam.
Mm-hmm.
I would send her. You could also do some soup and then freeze it.
You know, soup is a good idea. Yeah,
frozen soup, and then by the time she gets it, if you do an overnight FedEx or whatever, she get it. It'd still be a little block of ice, and she's got fresh soup, and she can pop that in the pan and just warm it up or put it in the microwave for a few minutes and then you get it hot. And
that is a very thoughtful gift. I like that idea.
A good soup.
And just do it in the little pint-sized containers. Yeah. And if you're going to ship, you might as well ship a half a dozen or
so
that she can pop them right in her freezer.
Exactly.
And then pull out one when she's tired and crabby and the baby's been bawling for an hour and you just want to make something delicious,
you know,
right?
It's
homemade. It makes you think of your sister. It's awesome.
Yeah. If you plan ahead, you could also put in sandwich bag, freeze it yourself.
And we don't do the sandwich bag thing, Chef.
Okay, never mind.
Okay.
We're all anti-sandwich bag.
Yeah.
Okay. Get with
reusable
program.
Containers.
Just use bags.
All right, Jim Maurer says, luckily I have good friends with a sailboat. We will join them in the Canadian waters next week. Like many of my friends, they love food and wine, and she's a fabulous cook. What should I prepare in the small but well-equipped galley kitchen that would be perfect to enjoy on a deck at sunset? That was a lot of, like, parameters.
We've got sunset.
You
we've got
a galley.
Deck. We're on a boat.
Yep.
We're in a small boat kitchen.
You're feeling pressure.
Let's do farm salmon. No, just kidding.
I was just thinking of wild salmon, and you said farm salmon. I'm like, what?
No, hopefully
they have some crab pots. They're going to drop the crab pots in, and then they're going to pick the crab pots up, and we're going to boil the crab and either just eat it warm with some drawn butter. Simple things are good on a boat. Or have a picking party and then get out the Hellmann's and make a little dressing for the crab and some Ritz crackers that I'm sure you stocked up on. And a little crab dip with Ritz crackers. It's just reminds me of my mom.
And bringing some fresh herb on a boat would probably be a luxury because they probably don't have that. So, you know, bring a little container of fresh basil and parsley and, you know, herbs you can add to your food at the last minute. That would probably enhance the whole thing and make it really delicious.
Sounds lovely.
All right. This is a tall order. Callisto Wybosh says she has a small extended family and they'll be celebrating 5 adult birthdays in October. Everyone loves to cook. What menu would you propose? So maybe something interactive?
Yeah, definitely. If they all love to cook, I would definitely say 5 people cooking, that's a 5-course meal.
Mm-hmm.
One person does the appetizers or amuse-bouche, whatever, for the cocktail reception.
Kind of like then, the game that we play where you have to have one ingredient, everybody has to use it somehow, right?
Yeah.
That or buy them all a cookbook, like some author has signed a book. Go to the book larder in Fremont, buy an author's cookbook, and then just tag a page for you so that you can make a whole meal out of that book. But tag those recipes, and each person gets one of the recipes to make out of a...
Yeah.
That's how my second book came about, Tom's Big Dinners. People told me they were having book parties with my first book, Seattle Kitchen, and that they would do that. And that's kind of how the second book came about.
That's super fun.
Putting together recipes for a big dinner.
That's a great, great party to have. Yeah. When you have people sharing like this, it's a very cool idea. I love interactive ideas like this.
Well, here's the other thing you could do. On Saturday night this last weekend at the wedding was the picnic. You know, you don't just have, apparently, I didn't have a wedding, so to speak. I eloped. But apparently, weddings are a bigger deal than I realized.
They're also a lot costlier than you think.
Yeah. But apparently, like, so on Saturday night, the wedding was Sunday. On Saturday night, there was a picnic. And so 120 people, like, the same people that are coming to the
picnic.
Wedding.
A small picnic.
Yeah. So I had agreed to do the fried chicken for the picnic, and then my catering team did the buffet,
right,
other things. So I'm out there making fried chicken. I wish that I had had my sisters and family to help me, because I thought I would just kind of get going, right? I thought I would just fry the chicken. I'm a chef. I've been doing this for a long time. And so I knew to get ready in advance, because when the 120 people come, you know it's
right,
going to be a crush. So I had 100 pieces cooked for 120 people. And then I was just going to lightly just dredge the chicken. You know, it was all marinated in buttermilk and brined in pickle juice. And it was all ready to go. And I was just going to dredge to order and be kind of like an active station that we do when we cater.
Right.
Yeah, 100 pieces of chicken were gone in 20 minutes. And now I've got a line of 50 people waiting for more chicken, and I'm strolling about frying, you know, 10 pieces at a time of chicken strips. So, yeah, that was a crisis moment. Luckily, my nephew Tommy jumped in and started breading for me, because I had this big bin and I was trying to do it all, and it wasn't working out so good. And my fryer oil, you know.
Even on your daughter's wedding
day. I know.
Day.
I had this big pan of oil, but by about three quarters of the way through it, it was dark brown.
Oh, wow.
And you could just see the flour, you know, the sediment flour
kind of
circulating around the chicken. And boy, you put the chicken in and it looks done in like 1 minute because it's all brown. But I thought it was pretty good. Did you have some chicken? There's my nieces over there. Did you have... It was delightful. See, so it came
out
good.
She's still here to talk about it.
It just was a little longer cooking event, like 3 hours, than I was planning on. So there, that's the way it
goes.
But
it is a picnic. I mean, that's very cool. I love the idea of a picnic this time of year.
Yeah, but I guess going back to your point, Tina, was that it's nice to invite people in to help you.
Right.
Especially when you're in the weeds. Next up, Save or Splurge on Kiowa Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen Show on Kiowa Radio from the Hot Stove Society. I'm Chef Tom Douglas.
And I'm Thierry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And Thierry, there's always a question that we get at the show.
Uh-huh.
Usually it's either from the audience or somebody on our Facebook page asking, when do I save my money and when do I spend my money? When is it worthwhile to buy up? And so, Tina, you found some stuff with Miss Oprah. I don't imagine she ever... buys down.
No.
Do you think that's true?
Am
I just projecting that?
Sometimes I think that she might find some savings here and there, but if you look at Oprah's favorite things, they are often quite spendy.
Yeah. Do you suppose Oprah's a coupon clipper?
I'm gonna guess not.
Guess not. I would guess not.
I'm gonna guess she doesn't have time to cut coupons.
She's busy saving the world.
Exactly.
Yeah. So this does come from Oprah.com, and it's some suggestions and some kind of questions on where one might decide to spend money or save some money when it comes to a home kitchen or buying food.
Yeah, the title of the article is 12 Ways to Eat Well on a Budget.
Mm-hmm. So the first one is fish and seafood. She's saying there's nothing fishy about frozen. So,
and she's 100% right. You just have to know what to buy frozen.
Mm-hmm. And you have to thaw it properly, right?
Correct.
That's the big thing about frozen seafood is making sure that you don't just put the faucet on top of the raw fish, your scallops, your shrimp, whatever it is.
Don't put them in hot water no matter what you do.
You thaw it in the fridge, or you thaw it naturally without any added water, and then it'll be fine. And when you cook previously frozen fish, the cooking time is quite a bit less because the cell structure has enlarged. And then some of the moisture will drop out, and so the density isn't the same, and you will end up with overcooked fish quickly. So like salmon, I would say, for example, if you get some Copper River or Bristol Bay sockeye salmon that's been frozen in a fillet, let it thaw out naturally. It'll only take an hour, probably. It's probably less than an inch thick. And then just cook it about, to 120, 125 degrees in the center. And it should be fine, but it'll take less time than if it's a fresh fish.
Right. So save your money by buying frozen. And what about splurge?
Not just save your money by buying frozen, but you can buy off-season still wild fish because it's been frozen, right?
Right.
So the season's
right.
only a month or two long.
I don't know.
So pay attention to that.
Yeah.
The saving the money on anything that's that delicious and that wild and all that stuff, usually it's a little bit more expensive. That makes total sense. But don't make yourself a 10-ounce steak or 10-ounce piece of salmon. You don't need to eat that much salmon at once. You know, keep it down to 5-6 ounces at the most. Make some vegetable on the side. You know, make a meal that is balanced as opposed to just focus on the protein, which is, sadly enough, you know, we make that mistake all the time.
Mm-hmm. And they're suggesting splurging when it comes to wild Alaskan salmon.
Sure, why not?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Got to keep those fishermen in business.
All right, what about baking ingredients? Where do you save and where are you going to splurge?
Just all in all, I would say one that usually comes up is vanilla,
right.
Imitation vanilla compared to real vanilla. And so I would say splurge.
Yeah.
And it's like salt, right? Even fancy salt is still, by the amount you use, you're still using very few pennies worth. With vanilla at the prices that it is right now, I just spent $36 on a 4-ounce jar of vanilla. But even so, I'm using a teaspoon or a tablespoon at a time, right? It goes quite a long ways. So splurge on real vanilla.
Same with your eggs. If you're baking, you know, buy good eggs. Just make sure you splurge a little bit on the egg. It's going to be a difference of a few cents, and you're going to use 4 eggs in your cake. Mm-hmm. It's not going to break you down to spend an extra 75 cents on eggs, but you'll have a much better egg and better cake also.
All right, what about cookingware? You want to go there?
Cookingware, certainly.
Okay.
Why not?
They're saying a good pan is essential. So you can save on some pans, but you really want to splurge on others.
I would say a good pan or two is essential.
Right.
But if you're boiling water, who cares, right? It's not. You don't need a good pan to boil water. You're blanching your vegetables. But a good saute pan is really nice to have because it spreads the heat more evenly and it is more delicious. My favorite one on this list, though, I want to make sure you get to it with our time, which is vodka. There's a lot of cheap vodka in the market, and then there's a lot of very expensive, highly marketed vodka in the market.
That's right.
What is vodka? It is a neutral spirit.
Correct.
You know what that means? It has no flavor.
You can add anything you want to it.
Anything you add to it is going to change the flavor of the vodka. So no matter what you spend on it, it's really the only thing you really get out of vodka is the alcohol and the buzz in your head. So... I would say save your money, buy cheap vodka if you're going to blend it. If you're going to drink it straight up, then have at it. Buy whatever you want.
And what
make yourself feel good.
What liquor are you going to splurge on then? What's one that you just don't want to do that?
Well, anything you're not going to mix. So even a lot of gin gets mixed, right? A martini is mixed with vermouth, which has 20 herbs in it, right? So you already are messing with the flavor profile of the gin, so things like that. I would say where I personally would spend my money and splurge is on fresh herbs.
Yep.
They make such a difference when I'm cooking. What do you think about that?
I think it's a great, great idea because I think that's not a common trade. Most people don't use that. And it's a great finish to any drinks, especially this time of the year, the amount of basil we have everywhere, all this fresh herb, tarragon, anise, hyssop, mint. Use all those ingredients, muddle them or put them at the end on your drink and make sure then you make it so it's edible. If you put a giant head of mint on top of a drink, no one's going to touch it. But if you muddle it into your drink, the flavor will be there. And just put a little leaf at the end so people can actually eat that.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be my recommendation for that.
One of my recommendations would be is to go learn more about where your food comes from. I was driving at 4:30 this morning through the Yakima Valley, and I could see the headlights of the hop trucks that are cutting down the hop vines heading towards the kiln. Mm-hmm. And the entire valley smelled like fresh hops. It is such an incredible feeling to know where your food comes from and how organic that is.
Right.
Is to drive through the field. Literally, the highway goes right through the hop field. Mm-hmm. There were 1,600 acres of hops that I drove through this morning. So that's a lot of hops.
That's a lot
and
of
they
hops.
They are, you know, I didn't know Prosser had a rush hour until I got up at 4:30 in the morning. There were people everywhere in the fields harvesting Concord grapes, hops, vinifer grapes, onions, carrots, corn, beans. Everything's being harvested right now. And it is such a great drive. get up early and go out to the go out and drive through the fields while they're being harvested. You know, it's so much cooler. Turns out we should have had the wedding at 4 o'clock in the morning. It's a lot cooler than it was when we had the wedding. So the other thing in this one, Tina, that I wanted to make sure we got to because I feel strongly about it is the fruit. It's such a difference. Like, you spend your money on organic for a mango compared to organic for a strawberry.
Right.
Right? One is a soft fruit that takes in all that pesticides, and it's considered, a strawberry is considered, I think, the dirtiest fruit out there. Don't quote me, but I believe so. Whereas a mango or an avocado that has a hard shell on it is a little bit different.
Right.
It doesn't take in as much of the pesticides that the farmers deal with. So something to think about when you want to go organic, go on blueberries, strawberries, anything that doesn't have a hard shell. Would be my thought on that.
Totally 100% with you, Tom. You gotta, you know, go to those stands on the side of the road. The guy just came back from the farm up north and he's on the side of the road selling his fruit. Those are great places to go buy your fruit. Find them. I mean, like the Mount Vernon Valley, the whole valley over there is, the Skagit Valley is all full of stands, and this is the time of the year to go and buy and make your conserve and your preserve and, you know, even just eat.
Yep. And then fancy olive oil. Save the fancy olive oil for when you're not heating it.
That's right.
It's a finishing oil, and then it'll be worth the money, more delicious. You won't use all that much of it, or you won't, but I will. All right. Up next, they have so many good food neighborhoods in Seattle. We're going to start in Fremont and kind of work our way around the city. Why not, huh, Tina?
Yeah.
On Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. It's time for the Seattle Kitchen Show, hour number two. Thank you so much for joining us. We still have coming up Bethany Jean Clement is going to be here for segment two of our hour number two. So it's a little extension of our Seattle Times interview from last week. We are going to check out what's in your fridge, which we like to do. We like to peek inside and have a little gander.
And play the little game of let's use everything.
And, of course, the wrapping up the two-hour show is our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge. It's going to be very exciting today because we don't know who our competition is at this point.
Mm.
Hey, we have a new sponsor on the show, Whidbey Camano Island. We want to share with you a fun event happening out there. The farmers, producers, and chefs of Whidbey Island are passionate about what they do and where they live. At the end of the growing season, it's time to share the bounty of the land during the Whidbey Island Grown Week, a 10-day celebration of local products, services, and experiences coming up September 27th to October 6th. Learn more at whidbeycaminoisland.com/Seattle Kitchen. And you can also go to our Facebook page, Seattle Kitchen, where we've posted all sorts of things about this promotion. Tina, you had this idea to check out some of our food neighborhoods, and you wanted to start with one because you have a studio in Fremont.
I do.
So we're
going to
start
studio.
In Fremont and talk about all the things that are happening there. Fremont is just north of Seattle, just on the other end of Lake Washington, west of Wallingford.
Lake Union.
East of, yeah.
That, not Lake Union. Washington.
East of Ballard, but it's not Freelard, which is the transition from Fremont to Ballard, Freelard.
Right.
So we're in a very
Fremont
specific
proper.
Area.
Right.
And it's kind of the base of it. The parameters are what? Stoneway to Fremont Avenue?
Leary? About?
Leary, Stoneway like, to Leary.
When it
is what
turns
you're
into
thinking
Leary
in your
over
head.
There? Yeah. Sure.
So places like, what is it, Norwest?
Yeah.
That or doesn't count.
Dish doesn't count. Nope. Oh, okay. We're staying on this side.
All right. The Varsity Drive-In, the Varsity Cafe doesn't count.
You're out of bounds, Tom. You're out of bounds.
Well, gas works.
Right,
yeah,
right. Yeah. Stay in the perimeter.
Very specific.
One of the wonderful things about the Fremont neighborhood, hands down, is if you walk through and you're getting a morning coffee, the neighborhood smells like chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
And when you live in Fremont and your neighborhood smells like chocolate, that's something special.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it because of
Theo's?
Theo's, yeah.
It used to smell like
disclaimer,
beer.
Disclaimer, I'm a stockholder of Theo's Chocolate, so you know.
Good
and
job,
Theo's
Tom.
Is so fun because they have a chocolate factory there in your neighborhood. You can do tours in there. The chocolate's delicious. It's a pretty fun hometown spot. Mm-hmm. So Fremont's a great place for a foodie place, especially because it smells like chocolate. But we could start with...
You know, it used to smell like wort.
It used to smell like beer.
I know.
Too,
because, the beer wort.
Yeah.
Remember the boiled barley? That's what it used to smell like.
Red Hook. Was it Red Hook? Red Hook was
Red
there,
Hook,
yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. And we could start, you know, even with just coffee in Fremont. If you start in the morning, you get your coffee. I've mentioned this before. One of my favorite spots in the city is a very tiny, tiny coffee shop called ETG. And it can fit maybe three people in there. Mm-hmm. But they make everything homemade in there, all their pastries. They roast the beans right there in that little spot, and it's quite delicious. ETG. Okay. Where are you going, though, if you're going to... Let's go to dinner and hit
Well, first I've got some pastry to go with the coffee, and I would definitely get your coffee at ETG, mm-hmm. and then get your pastry at Seawolf.
Oh, yes.
Really mm-hmm. delicious, and I wouldn't call them a coffee house. It's more of a bakery, a pastry kitchen.
Yes.
And, yeah.
Might as well pick up a loaf of bread if you can while you're there. Because
just eat the whole darn thing, yeah.
Hang exactly. out there.
That smells so good over there. Okay.
Yeah. All right, now lunch.
How about casual lunch?
Casual lunch,
you
yeah.
You need a burger?
If you want to walk down the canal, right, because the canal goes right through Fremont, I would go to the 318 Tavern for a burger.
Yeah.
Super delicious. Or if you want something to go sit on the banks of the canal. The PCC is right there, and they have an amazing... collection really? Of to-go food, right? You can just get all sorts of salads and mm-hmm. all sorts of deliciousness. There's plenty to do. I used to go to Blue Sea in Fremont once in a while, but they have closed.
So. Yeah, they're not there.
Yeah.
There's also, I really like You Need a Burger. I mean, you have to trek up the hill just a few blocks, mm-hmm. but You Need a Burger is quite delicious over there. All right, so that's lunch.
Mid-afternoon snack,
yeah. I knew that's where you're going.
Yeah,
I could see it.
Exactly.
Getting hungry.
I would go to the Pacific Inn,
which is
right there. Good fish and chips snack. They say 3 o'clock or something with some garlicky fries and a nice ice-cold beer to go with it.
You could get your fish and chips and then also head over to Fremont Brewing and eat your fish and chips outside there if you want to. Or eat them outside.
Brewing is sort of in Freelard, though.
It's still still in our perimeters.
Okay,
still there.
Fine.
Yeah.
We'll have to agree to disagree on that one. Okay, so now we've got appetizers before dinner.
Ooh,
now you can go back to Jewel, I think.
Yeah, no, you can go back to Jewel and have a nice, wonderful little dinner over there, especially on the terrace.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very nice fireplace, you know, fire burning around and get your cocktail. They have fabulous cocktail.
Mm-hmm.
I've used that place a few times to go across the street, watch a concert at the Nectar Lounge, go see Clinton Ferron, some nice reggae music, but drink across the street.
All right. Healthy dinner. Eve. Eve right there by the bridge is really good. They're famous for their grain bowl, and it's warm and delicious, and I really enjoyed it, the atmosphere there. I think it's a fun little spot.
Yep.
Or, of course, you've got the Whale Winds, Renee's place over there next to Jewel. A lot of deliciousness going on. There's a Mexican restaurant kind of on, I want to say...
There's Pablo y Pablo.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
outside,
that's the place.
It's a fun spot.
I have yet to eat there. I really want to try it.
It's super fun.
And I grew Dolce, too, down the street, right at the corner of, 32nd?
The Art of the Table?
No, Agrodolce.
Agrodolce.
Oh, yeah.
And,
Maria Hines restaurant.
Art of the Table is out there in Fremont, too.
Oh, yeah.
Super Bueno Tacos, one of Ethan's places. And then, Terry, you have a place that you like to kind of get your cocktail at one of these fancy restaurants, and then you go have some music. Where do you go?
I go to the Nectar Lounge,
uh-huh.
and I go listen to Clinton Ferron when he plays there because I love his music, good mm-hmm. reggae music. But I always go with my friend Yazid. We always go across the street to get a cocktail, because they've got some very good cocktail at that bar at Revel.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so delicious. No, not
Revel is going to be back in Fremont. You know, their building's almost done. They moved temporarily to South Lake Union, but their building's looking close.
Yep. But anyway, there's all kind of good places to go get good cocktails down in Fremont.
You can go casual to fancy in that neighborhood easily.
Absolutely.
One night you could do all kind of casual, and the next night hit your fancy spots. So.
And it used to be more of just a bar place, and not anymore.
Right.
I'll tell you.
Back in the Triangle Tavern days.
Speaking of fancy, let's listen in to Bethany Jean Clement. We had a conversation with her, and we're going to talk about that when we come back on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show, and as promised last week, we are going to revisit our conversation with Bethany Jean Clement, from the Seattle Times and the new Seattle food section. Lots of different kind of thoughts about how that section should go and how reviews should go. If we recap some of last week's talk, it was about Bethany. It was about talking about how restaurants are going to be graded on everything from their noise level to their price points, and to really, I thought was most interesting, what they're trying to do. Are they accomplishing what they set out to do? So,
yeah, my colleague Tanvin and I are writing about restaurants, writing restaurant reviews in, I think, a really exciting, great way for the city of Seattle. We really want to hold places accountable. Right. And we're out there eating and eating and eating for all of you. So,
Chef and I were talking a little bit about the next drama that's coming down for us as restaurateurs, because things have been changing rapidly over the last 5 years, from sick and safe pay to family leave to predictive scheduling to we got this new one coming down, which is and by the way, I will say, and minimum wage, I will say I am for all of those things. I think whatever's good for our team is good for us. But the reality is they're all very expensive, which is you're starting to see in Seattle restaurant prices day in and day out. But the other one that was the hotel, the
Legislation 124.
Yeah.
Which was voted in by the voters 2 years ago for bringing a panic button to housekeeping in hotel, which is totally logical. That yes, that's a no-brainer.
But this was in the small print.
But in the small print of that legislation, there was also any ancillary businesses located in the building, which, in between those two things, there was the hotel needs to provide an amount of health insurance to each employee, just to each employee. And the first legislation that came around was $690 per month per individual, and $1,690 for a husband, wife, and two kids, which we did the calculation at Lule. If I was to do this, it would be over $50,000 a month. Now, I don't know what you guys think out there. Mm-hmm. Maybe we have a beautiful restaurant and it looks like we're millionaires, but I hate to break you the news. That doesn't even come close to our profit.
Yeah.
So we would be closing the door if this legislation was actually going through as written.
Yeah, Lola was $160,000 a month plus here at the hot stove. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if this passes and what happens when it goes. So one of the things you were on your list last week, you were talking about, is how difficult it is, because of some of these things, but also just the environment for young chefs to kind of get started. What were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, as anyone who lives in Seattle is highly aware, it is getting more and more expensive to do anything. Mm-hmm. And the costs for entrepreneurs here have escalated mind-bogglingly. And a young chef starting out, Seattle used to be a really hospitable environment. You could get a place with cheap rent, a little place, run it yourself, have an employee or two, and that's just not viable anymore. And it's also hard for the big name chefs. I recognize that too. My understanding is that, and you guys can tell me your recent experiences with this, is that chefs trying to hire staff for their restaurants, whether front of the house or in the kitchen, are having to offer above the current minimum wage just to get people to come work. Oh,
absolutely. You would not hire anybody if you were just paying minimum wage. Or at least for me, I know that wouldn't work.
not even for a second.
Not even close, yeah.
So that's I have no problem. I'm happy that the cooks are getting their due finally. I have no problem with that.
I'm the same way. I feel it's fine, but what's important in this equation is for the diner to understand why. Because remember, this is voted by the people, right?
But they still have to make a choice. Even if they voted for it, they still have to make a choice whether they now want to eat in or eat out. And I said at the time, we went minimum wage 2 years before it was law.
Right.
And I said at the time, if some of our restaurants have to close because of the expense structure has changed, so be it. That's just the way it's going to have to be. And that's okay.
Well, I think we're seeing a divide in Seattle between people who are making a lot of money and people who aren't making much money at all. Right. And having grown up here, I grew up on Capitol Hill, I've seen that happen. And there are some people who can very well afford to go out to eat at any restaurant they want.
Right.
I couldn't do that if the Seattle Times weren't paying for the meals that I'm reviewing.
Well, most of us could not afford to do that on a nightly basis.
No, either. But I mean, part of what I want to do as a restaurant reviewer is help people spend their money really wisely and go to a place, find a place that they are going to love.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like writing the reviews in a way that's honest and comes from my heart will help people, even if they don't agree with me, then that's like a really great starting point for them. Right. They could say, well, she didn't like this place, so maybe I will, and I'm totally fine with that.
Right.
You know, in a funny way, when I talk to landlords around the city, I've stopped opening restaurants because I can't figure out how to make money doing it anymore. And you don't want to work like that if, I mean, it's a hard business. And so if you don't want to work like that, if you can't make a profit at it. But what I have been seeing is that there's, because of the way the city codes are written, where you can't build a building now without the retail space on the bottom, and of course Amazon is putting much of that business at risk, the cheapest thing to open is a restaurant. In a funny way, the landlord's willing to help you. It's the running the restaurant that's the problem, right? So it's very enticing to open a place. You can get free tenant improvement dollars. You can get all sorts. And I don't care if that used to be me, I could get that, and not necessarily everyone. Now everyone can get that. But it's that signing that 10-year lease and fulfilling those obligations over 10 years that has changed dynamically. You know,
correct.
Just the triple net charge, which is typically your restaurant, the building insurance, the fire, the real
estate property,
tax,
on the outside.
My triple net charges, and for any restaurateur in town that's on that kind of program, you know, real estate has gone up 4 or 5 times in downtown Seattle, record prices every week.
Yeah.
So when that jumps into your rent model, it changes everything.
Right.
Yeah, people don't seem to understand why menu prices are going up, and they're going up because prices in the city overall are going up astronomically. And I know running a restaurant, again, it's incredibly hard to even find staff. And, you know, you guys are up, you're between a rock and a hard place here, especially if the economy hiccups.
I was going to say, and this is
it. It should be a really interesting time in Seattle. I do want to say there's just a great New York Times article about immigration and how we need people coming in because we need workers. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we should all be working on.
Yeah. So the other thing that is interesting about what you're reviewing is I'm really excited to, you know, in L.A. with Jonathan Gold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The strip mall dining, mm-hmm. you know, all that kind of stuff that happened in L.A. that I found very exciting to read about a little place out there in the middle of nowhere, right?
Yeah,
that seems like right up your alley also to me. So.
We're super excited to get out into areas beyond like Seattle proper, but mm-hmm. also finding the remaining little tiny places still in Seattle that really need all of our support.
There's plenty of them in Seattle that are not being talked about.
Yeah, and I would love to hear from anyone who has any suggestions. I'm always ready to go eat more, so send me an email.
I can't wait to read your experience so I can follow suit. I'll follow you.
All right, up next, it's time for What's in Your Fridge on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. I'm choking to death on my sandwich.
Not to death.
Not to death. No, I'm still talking. So, it's the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Thierry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
We're coming to you from the Hot Stove Society. It's our little culinary center here above Lola in the Hotel Andra, where we do lots of social classes. Tonight I'm doing a benefit for the Alaska Trustees. This is a group that we're hoping is going to go after the EPA and try and help stop the Pebble Mine, which the EPA just put back into play last week. So we are
good job, Mr. Douglas. You're such a good man.
We're trying to get that stopped. It's for humanity. It's not just for me. It's for humanity. And if you all don't think that way, you should watch the movie The Breach online. Might cost you a couple bucks, but it was a documentary, you know, a nonprofit documentary. So look at The Breach and then tell me that it's not worth trying to save the last great salmon run left on Earth.
Oh, The Wild is also a good documentary.
Yeah, but it's not online yet. Or go to, for free, you can watch the Frontline episode.
Right.
On PBS-produced Frontline. Very interesting. Both sides of the argument on that show. We asked our listeners on Facebook to tell us what's in their fridge and how we could offer some advice, like fatherly advice, since we both have recently married or both recently in-lawed.
Yes.
So we'll give fatherly advice on what to do with what's left over in your
you
fridge.
You just made us sound really old suddenly, Tom.
Well, we are, dude.
No, we're not. To you. Jeez. No, we're not that old.
Couple of spring chickens.
Yes. These are just numbers.
More like old roosters. Ready to get their neck
not
whacked.
Not quite yet.
Yeah. Okay. Tina?
Tom, on Facebook, yes, we asked people what is inside of your refrigerator. This is your opportunity to help them make something delicious from what's inside there. Catherine Oslin has something more specific for Chef Thierry. Do you see what she's asking of you, Chef?
Tahitian tidbits.
What's bonjour de Rayeta? What is that?
My guess is that Rayeta is a town in Tahiti or something, somewhere around there.
Okay.
That would be my guess. I'm not sure.
What's inside her fridge is, coconut milk, lamb, frozen vegetables, mango, papaya, pineapple. She's got some rice and some salted pork.
Mmm. Well, I'm definitely going to make a curry with that because that's definitely up my alley. Lamb curry would be delicious. I like to take my lamb and actually give it a dry rub. Pieces of lamb, cube lamb, make it into a dry rub and put that on top of your lamb and let it macerate for a little while you're prepping the rest of your curry. I would do sauté onions. Let me see. What else does she has in there? She has definitely a rice, so I would definitely cook her rice on the side and put the rice added to the curry at the end. But first I would do lardon, onions. She has frozen vegetable, which I'm taking. It's probably green beans and peas and corn, probably. So I would put all that into the stew of, after you do all that curry, onion, put all the vegetables in there, toss the whole thing together, add your rice that's cooked already, and your seared pieces of lamb that have been cooking on the side. Put all that together, a little bit of coconut milk, and let it cook very gently and very slowly, and finish it with a bunch of fresh herbs at the end. I don't know if she has any. I don't know if she's in Tahiti.
Just grab some scissors and head her out to your neighborhood.
Here we go.
No problem.
Urban foraging.
Urban foraging.
I have to tell you, especially rosemary. You can get that anywhere. Right?
Yeah, well.
Right, these days.
I don't know if Tahiti is. She sounds like she's in Tahiti, so.
Oh, yeah.
That's cool. I'm really liking that little lamb curry. I haven't had that in a while.
I'll have some. Thank you. Yeah. What's the next fridge?
All right. Allison Dickerson has some pork roast, corn on the cob. She has the usuals like eggs and things, almond milk, bell peppers, Brussels sprouts, gorgonzola, mozzarella, strawberries, and some corn on the cob that she says desperately needs to get used and may already be too dry.
Well, if it's already too dry, and we're looking at it now, so that's 10 days ago, so yeah, it's very...
All right, so you're going to rule out the corn on the cob.
Let's get the grill going. Let's make some... take your pork roast. Even if it's already cooked, you can still make kebabs out of it, and just marinate it in some teriyaki sauce or barbecue sauce if it's pre-cooked. And then you just sear it like you would if you've cooked it from raw all the way to that point where you add your sauce so you don't burn it on, right? So the last 10 minutes of cooking, you're just going to sear on your sauces. You're going to cook your corn as long as you have the grill going. Grill your corn. And then we're going to make a little chopped salad out of the rest of the things. There's broccoli, romaine, strawberries, mozzarella, Brussels sprouts, bell peppers. We're going to make a chopped salad out of all of that. So we have corn on the cob, chopped salad, barbecue pork skewers or teriyaki pork skewers. And
keep the egg and sausage for breakfast tomorrow morning.
Have something else tomorrow.
Nice.
It's all good.
All right, how about Emily Sakuma? She doesn't have much in there. She's got some Indian pickled mango, apples, Napa cabbage, eggs, tortillas, and cream cheese. Go for it, boys. Good luck on that.
Well, no, are you going to go?
No, go ahead.
Okay.
I can go right after you.
Well, I would take the pickled mango, and I would pan fry my eggs and then sliver the pickled mango right over top of your eggs. So you have pickled mango eggs. Super delicious, that pickled mango, and it's got a kick to it. Usually it's like a lime pickle that's got cardamom or something, mustard seed in there. Really good. I would saute my cabbage on the side of that. Hard, though. I want some brown sear on my Napa cabbage. And then I'm just going to serve my eggs right on top of the sauteed cabbage with the pickled mango. It's going to be good. Tortillas and cream cheese, that's for the neighbor.
Okay, Chef Thierry, would you like to take the next one?
Sure.
Stephanie Bradley has Parmesan cheese, bacon, jalapenos, and Dijon mustard.
Wow.
Uh-oh.
You're on a diet.
Get on, buy nothing, and get some vegetables.
Well, I'm definitely get some eggs to make at least something with eggs on this one. Bacon, jalapeno, Dijon, and Parmesan. I'd make a pasta. You know, I'd go with the pasta. And, you know, it's one thing that very few people do, but I love to do because I use Dijon mustard in everything. When my pasta are cooked, finish them with a little butter in the pot with a little bit of the juice left on the bottom, and then put a big fat Dijon mustard spoon in there and mix the whole thing together. So now you have pasta that are unrobed into like a little Dijon mustard bite. And then mix that with your grate your Parmesan and your bacon that's been cooked on the side. Dice the whole thing together and put it into the pasta, and you're almost like a Alfredo without the cream, kind of.
Yeah, like carbonara. Or,
yeah. No cream, just Dijon
carbonara
mustard.
Doesn't have cream.
Dijon mustard and bacon. I think that's plenty.
Mustard and carbonara sounds delicious.
And shaved Parmesan.
Next fridge.
Liz Clark only has kohlrabi, and she doesn't like it.
That's probably why it's left in her fridge.
Yeah. All right. I guess let's take this opportunity to talk about kohlrabi and what you're going to do with it.
Sure, why not?
No, I would stir fry it and just put a little bit of soy sauce on top and then use that as a side dish to anything you were going to serve.
So she tried it raw. She didn't like it. She tried it quick pickled. She didn't like it. I like your idea of stir fry in a hot wok.
Yeah.
Because kohlrabi has got natural sugars in it, and it caramelizes much like broccoli does or cauliflower does when you roast it. So something like that sounds
And if
delicious.
By any chance you have a rice cooker, you should have some rice ready and just toss that together.
Uh-huh.
A little bit of soy or even fish sauce would be delicious on top of that.
Mm. Fish sauce with anything.
Yeah. Not in my coffee, but almost.
Well, if you make a fish sauce caramel, we've talked about that on this show before, but it's an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
You put caramel, or you put sugar into a hot pan, right? Or put sugar into a pan and then get it hot.
Right.
Right? And then just keep heating it until it turns golden brown. And then add fresh ginger and fish sauce to that, right? And it'll make your kitchen stink like crazy. But it's unctuous and delicious. And then once your caramel, ginger caramel is ready, then you just simply stir in your kohlrabi or something, go from there, and you have caramelized kohlrabi. You can put it on skewers and grill it. Kohlrabi has got a nice bite to it, and it stays on the skewer, unlike, say, other like tomatoes or something that fall off all the time, or peppers. But the kohlrabi will stay in a nice chunk.
But kohlrabi is a good vegetable. It's especially grilled, barbecued. It's really nice.
Mm-hmm.
I would recommend try cooking it.
Okay. Up next we have Food for Thought Tasty Trivia, and we're going to ask Janet to come over here. Chef Janet is the trusty steward of the Hot Stove Society during the day, and we often see her over there working away, getting ready for the next class. What class are you working on, Janet? Oh, right now she's just organizing, so much for that thought. Why don't you organize yourself right over here? And Chef Terry said he's going to kick your patootie in the Tasty Trivia Challenge.
She's coming all feisty and
I know you're not
going
to let that happen. All right, up next, Food for Thought Tasty Trivia on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. We are back in the kitchen here at the Hot Stove Society. Time for Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. And Chef Janet, one of the chefs here at the Hot Stove, is going to take over the guest mic.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to win today, Janet?
Moi.
Oh, moi. Really?
My money's on Janet.
Chef in the Chapeau, is that the other mic?
Yeah, I'm getting a little bit scared because there is two Douglas in front of me.
I'm going to cheat today because the whole Douglas family is here.
Today?
In the front row. And Laura Douglas came up to be my wingman.
And to mention.
Wingwoman.
Tom, to mention, you're not related.
We don't know that yet.
Yeah, okay. We haven't.
You haven't seen. I haven't seen my family tree. How do you know?
No, she said you will not.
Laura, for being my wingman and cheating with me, you get. Wing person. You get a $25 gift card to our gift shop after the show, just so you know.
Ooh.
So we don't cheat without paying.
All right, here's the way the game is played. Each of you will get five questions. Whoever gets the most correct is obviously the winner, and whoever gets the least amount of answers correct is the loser. And that person who is not the winner will need to pony something up for somebody who loves our show. Today you will be playing for Emily. She came to us from West Seattle. She's sitting in our audience today and was brave enough to hop on the mic earlier in the show and ask a question. So, Janet, should you lose today, and I doubt you will,
exactly.
My faith is with you.
Yes.
What will you give to Emily?
So, for Emily today, we'll be giving away tickets to one of our lunch clubs upcoming, and one that is on the agenda that sounds very fun is Lunch Club Grilling with one of our new instructors, Sean McFadden, and it's all about kebabs and peaches and flatbread and all kinds of fun summer things, end of summer items.
Yummy.
And when is that?
This one is on September 11th. So what more would you rather do on a day like that than come in and have some food and fun?
Yeah, yum. There you go. And those are $30 each ticket, I believe. So that's yes. $120 of value. That's a four-person lunch club.
Exactly.
All right.
Nice.
Chef Thierry.
I'm going to give happy hour for two at Luke on a Sunday night or a Monday night. Nice. Because we have live music. We have a bandoneon player on Sunday night and an accordion player on Monday night.
How fun. Mm. Delightful.
How's that for an idea?
All right. No matter who...
Let's make that $50.
And then I'm going to give dinner for two at the Palace Kitchen.
Oof.
And that's a $100 value, and it's open till midnight every night for dinner, so come on down.
All right, so no matter what happens today, Emily is definitely a winner.
Yes.
All right, who would like to go first?
I'll start.
All right, Chef, what type of oven will not brown foods?
Oh, microwave oven?
There you go. There nicely you go. Done. He got there. He got
I
there.
Get there eventually.
Nice job. Question number two. Which country in Europe consumes more spicy Mexican food than any other country in Europe?
Sweden.
That's
Denmark.
A good guess. Anyone? Norway.
Oh, Norway. That was the other
answer.
One. Oh.
All right. Question number three. True or false? Almonds are a member of the peach family.
True.
Correct. Nicely done. Question number four. What famous Greek once advised, let your food be your medicine and your medicine be your food?
Not sure.
Anyone?
Hippocrates.
Hippocrates is the answer. Good job, audience. All right. Question number five for you. You are even. Two correct, two incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
Let's tip it over the top here. Number five. What interesting way does the snake bird, darter, or water turkey catch fish?
With a beak.
I mean, I'll take it. Yeah, they spear it with their beak.
Yeah,
three correct and two incorrect. Good job,
Woo.
Chef.
That was a rough one.
All right, Ms. Janet, would you like to go next?
Sure.
All righty. Your first question. Chicken is the leading cause of what foodborne illness?
God, I don't know.
Athlete's foot?
Yes.
Athlete's foot.
Yes, athlete's foot. Yeah.
Salmonella.
Yes.
Salmonella.
Thank you.
Easy. Good Italian.
That was just a brain freeze, I think,
easy.
On that one.
Total.
All right, you're coming back. That was just a warm-up.
Too much wine over the weekend.
Question number two. What group of people were the first to use freeze-drying on potatoes?
The Irish.
That's a great idea. I love it.
Anyone?
No, the Mayans.
The Peruvians, the Incas.
Incas.
Oh, sorry, Incas, not the Mayans.
Oh,
Incas.
God.
Yes.
Incas is the
Okay,
answer.
I have to make a comeback now.
All right, what was the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles' favorite food?
Oh, come on, really?
Go ahead.
Pizza.
It was pizza.
It was pizza. Good job, Janet. Nice job. It was pizza.
I'm glad you
don't get a $25 gift card. That's not the wrong person.
All right, question number four for you. Bologna is a form of what?
Sausage?
Yes.
Oh,
sausage
well,
is.
There you go.
All right. You also, two correct and two incorrect.
Pressure, pressure.
Tip it over the top. What is the top-selling cookie in the United States?
Ooh.
Looking for a brand here.
Ooh. Would it be like Oreo?
It is. It's Oreo. Good job.
Yeah.
You have now tied with Chef Thierry. Tom, you'll need four correct for the win today.
You don't stand a chance. I've got Laura Douglas next to me.
Team Douglas, your first question. What food was considered the food of the gods and was said to bring eternal life to anyone who ate it?
Fruitcake? No, I don't know.
It's a hard
one. Think, chocolate?
Chocolate.
Okay, there you go. She says chocolate.
The answer is ambrosia. Question number two. You guys ready?
Yep.
What happens if you put a rotten egg in water?
The shell peels off? No.
Nope. Tom, do you want to weigh in? You're a team.
It sinks.
Yep.
Yep.
And it stinks, too.
It actually floats.
And it stinks.
You had a 50-50 chance.
Yeah, it floats.
It sinks and it floats.
All right, question number three. What added ingredient keeps confectioner sugar from clumping?
Toothpicks?
No.
Cornstarch.
Cornstarch is the answer. Gosh. All right, that's all right. You're still kind of in it?
I think we're 0 for 3 right now.
You're
is that
going,
true?
Yeah, you're 0 for 3.
We're not in it.
But you're
not in it.
Let's keep playing. Let's keep playing.
It's fun to watch this.
Janet!
For Janet and Chef Terry. All right, black-eyed peas are not peas. What are they?
Legumes. Legumes?
They're beans.
Yeah, legumes.
Legumes, same thing. All right. Question number 5, your last question. An average ear of corn, is this true or false? An average ear of corn has an even number of rows.
Even.
The answer is even or two. Good. They usually have about 16 rows. You guys, Team Douglas, not your best showing.
Laura, we didn't do so good. Thank you for all your help.
We shine in the kitchen.
Yes, we do.
We're much better cooks than we are trivia people. The thing is, Janet and Terry have tied.
It doesn't matter. I lost the $100 gift card to the Palace Kitchen. Enjoy, Emily, and have a good dinner at the Palace Kitchen. Yeah. If you want to be part of our show like Laura just did, or Emily, you can join us on the community on Facebook or Twitter at Seattle Kitchen. This show is produced by our friends at Large Media. That's LARJ Media. And our sound engineer is Sean Don't Call Me Del Torre. If you'd like to be part of our studio audience, go to hotstovesociety.com and buy tickets for only $20. It comes with breakfast and coffee. And remember, if you miss any episode of Seattle Kitchen on Cairo Radio 97.3, you can listen via podcast. Just subscribe to Seattle Kitchen on your favorite podcast app.
Thanks for listening.